Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
All right, good morning, everyone. Rich Castle over here in live in Buckhead for the Buckhead Business Radio X broadcast this week. Excited, we have a room packed with some amazing thought leaders, great personalities, interesting business gentlemen to talk to this morning. And let me introduce, first of all, our co-host here this morning, Neil Scott Barber. How are you doing this morning, Neil?
Great to be here. Despite the traffic, I made it in time.
All right, nice. And so a little bit about Neil before we jump into some of our guests here this morning. Neil's a successful business development executive, over 27 years, sales and management experience. And we've known each other for quite a number of years. And I know you've been involved in some major sports experience like the Olympics. Was it five of those?
Yeah,
games?
Yeah, starting with Barcelona and Albertville all the way through to the Athens Games.
Now, I was in Barcelona, but I don't think we knew each other at the time.
No, and I think there were a lot of people there, too.
Exactly. I thought, you weren't the guy, that I
no,
recognized.
No, I wasn't that guy.
Wasn't that guy. All right, and and speaking of the Olympics, how about the games this year, right?
Awesome.
I mean, you miss a little bit of it, or you don't have to? It's nice you don't have to work, right?
It's good just to sit in my armchair and watch for a change instead of being running around taking care of people, yeah.
Right. And if you haven't noticed already, Neil uses his authentic how do you say that?
Oh, I can help me with distinguished too. Yeah.
distinctive British voice accent. Over the years, for voiceovers, voice messaging, done a little bit of voice acting, and pretty active in the senior community and in some veterans associations.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And now, when did you first aware that you had this this bug, this acting bug?
Well, it was interesting. I was probably about 12, and I had this incredibly broad Yorkshire accent. Which is difficult for anybody over here to understand. But let's say if you had a broad Mississippi accent, that might be similar. And I wanted to get rid of it, and I was a very shy kid, and I thought I'll take some acting lessons, which I did in Leeds Bradford area where I used to live. And as a result of that, thought, I'm going to go to London. I'm going to be a famous actor. I wanted to go to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. But as I like to say, in my stories, my hero, Anthony Hopkins, beat me to it.
Right, exactly. Nice.
And I was in sales all my life and got to where I am now.
Yeah, that's when we first met or whatever in your former life in sales. But now, more recently, I know you've been doing some events at senior homes, and I've actually seen a couple of the videos, and you're very entertaining, but tell us a little bit more about that, about your activity.
Well, it's sort of a vision that I had. I was sort of led to, first of all, read to the blind and the visually impaired at something called the Georgia Radio Reading Service, no competitor to yours. That was specially for the blind. And as a result of doing that, I thought, you know, this would be great to try to entertain some of the folks in assisted living, independent living, in addition to the guitarists and the pianists and the singers that they have. And I came up with this little niche of lots of expressive readings, as I call them, with lots of different voices and accents.
And speaking of accents, do you have a couple of examples as we finish out with some commercial application or business?
Oh, to be sure. Of course, we've got St. Patrick's Day coming up, and I like to do a lot of that kind of thing. And, of course, the other thing is I like to report from the United Kingdom and talk about the Queen and her whole entourage, et cetera, you know.
All right. I'm not going to try to top that. Maybe our next guest will be able to do so. So it's my pleasure to introduce our first guest here on the show. I've met Adrian recently, and I'd consider you, from what I know, a bit of a mover and a shaker. Adrian Provost, is that correct pronunciation?
Correct, it is.
All right. High-end real estate marketing specialist, investment property virtuoso. I thought you had to have a violin to do one of those, right? But maybe you do. I don't know. We'll find out. Now, you're currently the CEO of a Provost International Realty, associate broker of Caldwell Banker, and chairman of American Estates Inc.
Correct.
So so tell us a little bit about how did this come about, or what is Provost International?
Well, first and foremost, Provost International Realty is essentially a modern property marketing firm and a listing agency. We use a lot of contemporary branding initiatives to really exploit the dynamic marketplace of Atlanta, specifically Buckhead.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we're welcome to the neighborhood. I don't know if you heard that. I don't know if you caught the news last night, but there's a big celebrity buying huge property. Did you hear about
Justin
this?
Bieber?
Yeah.
Oh, we reached out to him a few times.
We already got to listen, because I know you do some. You've done some deals for high end executives and athletes here in Atlanta. So I thought of you last night. I thought Man, I bet Adrian's already closed that deal.
Well, we're working on it, actually. Yeah, yeah. We haven't closed it or solidified anything just yet, but we definitely are working on it. So, Justin Bieber, if you are still looking for a place, give me a shout, Provost International Realty.
I know he's tuning in right now, whatever, yeah. So, now tell us about your first job in the industry.
Well, my first job in the industry was actually, it was pretty difficult. I was a buyer's agent, and specifically for investors. So I would go around looking at a lot of low-end property to find for that's going to be a good deal for investors. And almost like a bird dog, but not quite. And it was difficult, to say the least. Right, it was very time-consuming, and it wasn't well-paying, I'll say that as well. But it did give me a lot of experience and help me figure out exactly the valuations of properties, not just on the high end, but the low end as well.
I think in business they call that paying your dues, right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So now what's your current specialty?
Well, my current specialty is we do a lot of listings for high-end luxury estates and condominiums, specifically high-rise condos. And again, in Buckhead, Atlanta, we do a lot of stuff in Midtown Atlanta as well, downtown. We service the whole greater Atlanta region,
sure.
But we specialize in Buckhead.
Yeah.
So you already told us a little bit about the areas you serve, but do you go even further out in Metro Atlanta?
We do, actually. Mm-hmm. We do. We actually cover all of Georgia. Okay. All right. And we actually cover international properties as well. Me specifically in my personal specialty is in Buckhead. But I mean, we have properties out in Greece. We have properties in Los Angeles, New York, Miami. We have properties in France. So, I mean, we service literally everybody on a global scale. But again, my specialty and my expertise lies here in Buckhead.
Okay. So I think you're doing something with books. Is that right?
That is correct.
How are those books coming along?
The books are coming along rather well. Mm-hmm. We're working on two books. One is for specifically for investors, that you know, pretty much Investors 101. Okay. And then we also have another book for real estate agents that are either in the industry or, you know, not producing like they want to, or they're just new to the industry. And we show them how to become a top producer.
And you've published these already?
They're not published. We're working on them right now.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Great. So what's new on the horizon? What's the kind of next step?
Well, one of the biggest things that we're working on is the entertainment portion of real estate. We have some reality shows. We have a cartoon. The first episode is actually released already on YouTube. There's a lot of things that we haven't tapped into in the entertainment side of real estate just yet that we're focusing on right now. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of seminars and stuff too. We're putting together a national tour to do some seminars, investments, and again, sales as well.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who'd love to know a little bit more. So how can the listeners get out information from you? How can they reach
you?
Well,
the easiest way would be go to adrianprovost.com. That's adrianprovost.com. They can also reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. All of that stuff is @adrianprovost. My number is actually 678-957-SOLD. S-O-L-D 7653.
Wow, that's a good
nice.
One.
I like that one, yeah. I was going to take that. It was already taken, though. Yeah, yeah. Are you committed? Are you committed to that number? Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Adrian. Really appreciate it. It's a pleasure. And so if there's any big deals, celebrities, I'll get an invite to the party, or how does
Absolutely.
That work? Yeah. Okay,
Absolutely.
Nice. Thanks again. And I'm sure you'll stick around for other guests here as well. And up next, we have Corey Moore. I've known Corey for a while. And some call him the king of networking or the master networker, but it's anywhere there's networking, there's sure to be a Corey Moore somewhere within about 10 feet radius or whatever, right? I know you're passionately, you encourage entrepreneurs, sales associates, increasing their business through really face-to-face, right?
Right.
Because there's a lot of social stuff going on, which is great, but I think a lot of people put all their eggs in that one basket sometimes, right? And they miss out on the face-to-face experience. And these are like networking events, seminars, expos, B2B events, building... I know every time I go to your events, it's always the three C's, right?
Correct.
Client, collaboration, and competitor. And competitor always throws people.
Yeah. You got them.
Well, competitor always throws people off because they're like, I don't want to talk to my competitor. Yeah.
Why would I want to meet a competitor?
Yeah. In Atlanta, some people may know you more from the events you brought to Atlanta, like Damon John, Kevin Harrington from ABC Shark Tank
right.
event. That was huge.
Yeah.
You've done that, what, 2 years now?
We've done that 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So... So now this whole idea of networking, how did you get into this?
Well, I first started with my accounting firm about almost 11 years ago. And a friend of mine who was really big into having her own business was like, you need to get out and network. And just like any other person who really hasn't done networking, they're like, well, what is that? So I actually go out, and it was a crazy concept. You go out, you meet somebody new, they like what you do, they give you money. I said, oh, wow. Like, does everybody know about this?
Right.
Networking, huh? So I said, you know what? Let me get out and start. If I want more clients, I just need to go to more networking events. And every networking event I'd go to, now my product was a little bit different. I mean, I did taxes, and everybody got to get their taxes done. But the concept was the same. You go to a place where there's a group of people who want to know what it is you do. In that group, somebody's going to need your service.
Absolutely.
So after that, I just started saying, you know what? Networking is definitely the way to grow your business. I started seeing a lot of my tax clients whose businesses were kind of going down. And I said, you know what? Are you out networking? No, not really. And then
just
I talked
for the phone to ring.
Exactly.
Just
I'm just sitting here, sitting at my house, just waiting for somebody to knock on my door and give me some money.
Right.
I don't know what you do, but someone told me to give you some money. Yeah. But and then I started seeing like the clients who were doing well. Why are you doing well? Oh, I'm out there networking. So I really started seeing other people having success with this. So like I said, it wasn't a huge new concept or anything, but really the more people that you know, typically the more business that you end up getting.
Expand on that just a little bit more as to, you know, why it is so important for everybody to network who's in small business or I guess individual promoters as well. Just go into that a little bit deeper.
What it boils down to is if you sell a product, then that means you need to sell it to somebody new. Mm-hmm. The only place that exists on earth where there's a group of individuals that actually care about what it is that you do is a networking event. I mean, there's a group of people at the movie theater, but they don't care about you. They want to watch the movie.
Right.
But a networking event is the only place that exists. So what ends up happening is if you want to increase your business, you have to be in a room of these people so you can actually increase your database. And what Rich was talking about, the average networker is looking for clients. They go to an event. I want to find a client. If I didn't find a client, it was a bad event. No, you actually go for what we call the three C's, either a client, a collaborator, or a competitor. These are people who are going to actually grow your business. These are going to be things that's going to be resources for your business. People equal resources. The more resources you have, the more solutions you have. Because typically when you have a problem, you need a resource to solve it. The more resources you have, the more solutions you have, the more solutions, the more success you have. 100% of all the businesses that have failed, they've had a problem that they could not solve. So for us, we feel the more people you meet, the more solutions you have, the more success you'll have.
I think you touched on this right at the beginning, or Rich did. So what are all the other elements of Pro Networker that you do, as well as the networking portion?
So Pro Networker is a resource center for business events. You go to pronetworker.com, you'll be able to see a different events all over Atlanta, whether they're networking events, workshops, expos, lunch and learns, conferences, whatever the case is. If it's a business event, we have it listed. One of the other things that Pro Networker does is actually puts on events. So currently we do networking events. We just had our expo, our first expo that we did about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was there at the Cobb Gallery. That was huge, man. Yeah. I was like, it was very impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, we were very excited about that one. We actually had it at the Cobb Gallery in one of their exhibit halls. It wasn't as big, but it was in the same room as what the Atlanta Business Chronicle has their event and the Cobb Chamber has their event. So, you know, hopefully they'll take me under their
So watch
their
out,
wing.
ABC, whatever. Yeah, Corey's hunting you down. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as elaborate as theirs, but we're getting there. So, like Rich said, we've done larger events where we brought Damon John in town. We brought Kevin Harrington in town from the Shark Tank, did an event around investors. So we have a different, we like to have different concept events. So currently we have an event called Strictly Business, which that's our monthly event. And we're actually very happy since it's been going on for the last 18 months.
Wow.
In past November, we expanded it and we have two locations going on simultaneously. So most times we're very excited about that. We're probably one of the only ones in Atlanta right now that has a simultaneous event going on. So
now this social networking, which is huge. Tell me, what's the difference face-to-face and social? And I don't know if this is a trick question, but which is better? Yeah.
Well, if you ask me,
loaded question. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, me, saying, which is better. No,
I teed it up for you there.
Yeah.
For, yeah.
Social networking is actually it's very imperative for your business as far as reach is concerned, as far as introducing yourself to somebody who you might not necessarily see out, especially if they're in a different state or like Adrian, if they're in a different country or something like that. Social is definitely and powerful when it comes to expansion and reach. When it comes to solidifying relationships and building on relationships, you really can't beat the whole shaking somebody's hand. You really can't beat that. So if there's an opportunity, most times, unfortunately, people look at social media as, oh, I can exchange it with that. Right. I can just stay online and stay in my house and not go to this networking event. No.
You need that blend, right?
You need that blend. You and, definitely need that blend.
Not to call you out, but I was at a conference where you were on the panel as a panelist and where you went live with your Twitter account for the first time, right. Whatever, right? So so there's a balance there, right?
Yeah. Very much so is.
So
very
now so tell is. Us some tips for new networkers.
For new networkers, the average person who, let's say, has a job, who then gets into business, they're not used to talking about themselves. They're not used to talking about their product. They're eager to do it. Right, they want people to know, but they're not used to talking about it. When they actually go to a networking event is a great opportunity for them to say, you know what, I'm in an environment to where it's okay to do this. You know, if you were in a bathing suit and you went to the grocery store, you'd be out of place because nobody else is in bathing suits. But actually at a networking event, this is the environment for you to talk about what it is that you do. So usually when people are new, they should go to networking events. This is a great place for them to start. They feel kind of apprehensive about walking up to somebody, but that is the environment. People want you to walk up to them, introduce yourself, find out what it is that they do, tell them what you do, and keep the conversation going. So for new people, definitely get out there and try to, like I said, talk, go to a networking event. Networking event is a whole lot easier to introduce your business than maybe other events that aren't really networking events themselves.
Absolutely. I know you incorporate some of your events as speed networking, which is, if you haven't experienced that, that's quite a...
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really a lot of fun. So now, Corey, tell our listeners how they get in touch with you. What's the best way to reach
out? What they can do is actually go to pronetworker.com. That's our website. That's where we have, like I said, all the different events that are happening around Atlanta. They can also reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/pronetworker. And we are actually very excited about, hey, Rich, have you ever been looking for a networking event around Atlanta?
Occasionally.
Like, well,
Sunday through Sunday.
Gotcha. Well, did you know there's an app for that?
Nice.
So with that, if you go to the app store and you go to Pro Networker, you can actually download the Pro Networker app, and it is available right now on Android. And it will be available on iPhone, hopefully within the next couple of weeks.
You got to get the sign off by Apple and all those guys. Well,
yeah,
awesome. Well, I'll definitely be loading that and checking that out. So we're going to we appreciate you being here, Corey. Thanks again.
And, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of networking, quick story is that Adrian and I met at one of Corey's Strictly Business event. Right. And then all three of us reconnected somewhat unknowingly. Actually, you invited me to the there was a great event at the Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, Sunday morning, right, this is how dedicated some business people are, right? So, Adrian, you were exhibiting in a sponsor of that event, but it was at the Grand Hyatt right here in Buckhead.
Correct.
And Corey, we were all there. So that's networking is, to me, it's very effective for your business. So thanks again, Corey, for being here. Our next guest is Rich Goidel. Is that the correct? I got it right. All right. I've been practicing all week. And he's a strategic and graphic facilitator with extensive credits in marketing, technology, and media. A whiteboard, this is in air quotation marks, a whiteboard and big paper guy. We want to find out about that. With a deep experience in creative production, sales, and operations, Rich combines visual thinking techniques with agile, Scrum, is that correct? Yeah.
Close.
All right, I'm sure you'll correct me. Methodologies to help management teams generate ideas, solve complex problems, develop high flexible strategies and grow their business. And speaking of networking, Rich, you were a speaker at an event that I hosted a while back as well. So welcome to once again back face to face now and on the air. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. And so this idea of facilitation, I think in an email I was telling you, you call yourself the facilitator, which is better than the Terminator, right? You don't want to show up at a company, oh, the Terminator's here, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. So facilitator, tell us about that.
Well, technically, a facilitator's job is to make things easier. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're trained to do. Our job is to help people think together and to create strategic planning, action planning, and at the end of the day, get to consensus on what that's all about. And I like to add, without killing each other.
Right. That's always a good way to end the day. Whatever, yeah. So no one was hurt during this meeting.
It happens. It definitely happens.
Now, I don't know if this is one of your not catchphrases, but a lot of the premise of, I think, an attention grabber got me when this question about why do meetings suck?
Yeah.
Right? That's in your on your website. That gets your attention, right? Because everybody's been in those meetings,
sure.
Right?
Well, that's the thing. Everyone has been in those meetings about 50% of their working life. The stats on that are pretty amazing. I've got an article on my blog that the production loss factor for ineffective meetings is about 19%.
Wow.
So you're paying salaries to your employees. 19% of that is going out the window through ineffective work, which is astounding. Jeez. And that's because most management and most staff people from a survey, I think about 2 years ago, basically came down to they thought that about half of their meetings were a waste of time. And they didn't think they were a waste of time because they should not be meeting.
Right.
That's really a symptom. The waste of time is that they're badly planned, badly executed, and there's a little follow-up. But most of management is done through working together and thinking together and then, you know, creating planning and then acting on that plan. And so it's really important that companies meet and work together. But unfortunately, the effectiveness of that is pretty bad, typically.
They need to be able to manage and also show productivity
exactly.
as a result of the meeting, exactly. whatever, right? Now, this so I imagine if someone is considering hiring you, what would you say the benefits of a facilitation?
Well, typically, the benefits are that people will get together and they think that they're actually driving towards consensus on really concrete goals, but they only get about half the way there. And because of the dynamics of people and everybody has their own agenda, and you might be working with somebody who's a really strong driver in the company, and you're going to sit there and kind of agree with them, and maybe your voice is not heard. They never really get over the hump of deep thinking and deep planning. And so one of the benefits is to get to the core issues that are really important to an organization that rarely get touched on.
And I think we can wrap our head around the traditional facilitator, right? An event a speaker, presenter, mm-hmm. what have you. But how does that, you know, you set yourself apart as a graphic facilitator. How does that?
Well, so a graphic facilitator uses visual thinking most of the time to help people understand and dig deeper into what it is that they're talking about or what they're trying to get to. We often find that people in conversation don't really get to the key points very well, or maybe the other people in the room don't understand them very well. So using visuals and metaphor and analogy, we can get up on the wall and map things out where everybody in the room can see them. It's really tangible. You get to understand whether you have alignment on all of your thinking. And people can look at it and get the whole picture. And then at the end of it, walk away. If you're doing it on paper or you're going to create a PDF or whatever of the work, people can walk away and have a blueprint to follow that pretty much came right out of their own mouths and onto the walls.
Right, right. Nice.
So that's a little bit about visual thinking. That's very interesting. Now, from your own standpoint, what's the biggest light bulb moment that you have experienced in this?
So this is actually one of the moments that got me into being a facilitator full time. We were working with a client and had done a bunch of customer research, and we're kind of doing a report out for the client in a room with what we found and what we thought they could consider for their company in terms of the values that they were missing, what the gaps were, et cetera. And so I drew it. I drew it on the wall. I drew a picture of their value stream and where the gap was, what they weren't fulfilling for their clients. They were a manufacturer. Their clients were buying, at the end of the day, let's just call them widgets from them. And the CEO stood up in from his chair and loudly to the whole room said, "Yes, I can see it now." And we were driving home with my partner and I were driving back. And I just said, from now on, everything we do is going to have pictures. And I have to tell you, pictures speak incredibly well compared to everything else that we do. The brain processes pictures 60,000 times faster than text.
Wow.
Which is incredible. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know how you came up with the name Dangerous Kitchen. about the light bulb.
That's number one question. Yeah.
We could all think about, you know, kitchen with stuff flying, pans
sure.
everywhere, knives and so forth.
There's a lot of metaphor in there and a number of different stories. So, you know, a kitchen is where stuff gets created. It's definitely a creative endeavor, what I do. You can imagine people working together to create something in the kitchen, et cetera. I don't like to use direct metaphors personally. I leave that up to my clients and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it is a little dangerous. You know, you can get cut with knives. You need to be careful. So it takes some facilitation to make sure it happens well. And the little secret is that it's a Frank Zappa song from years ago. And I just
you're going to sing that for us?
No, I'm not. Okay. Singing that for
it. He's a visual person. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
But I fell in love with the name. It's really evocative. And when the domain became available, I snatched it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So what kind of company is the best candidate for facilitation?
That's a really great question. I think the best kind of company is what I would call a learning organization. I think there are three different kinds of companies. One company thinks it doesn't have any problems. Another company recognizes it has problems but is going to acquiesce to those problems and pretty much be an ostrich with its head in the sand. And then the last company understands that, no, business really is all about challenges and problems, and the job of management is to attend to those challenges and continue to learn and grow and maybe pivot their organizations. When they understand that, they're not afraid to get in a room and actually explore deeply. So those kinds of companies are the ones that will really work best. I do work with some companies that are, let's just say, dysfunctional, where they have people who don't know how to work together, and part of my job is to help them work together. So they're not necessarily the easiest, but sometimes the most rewarding when things actually happen for them.
And speaking of challenges, what's a challenge you run into in yourself and your business?
That's a great question. Yeah. The biggest challenge, of course, for me is helping people understand what I do and getting the word out about what I do. Yeah. And so certainly being in networking environments and doing stuff like this, you know, on the air are helpful. My customers tend to be in the C-suite or at least upper management. So getting out to those people is always the biggest challenge.
To be able to reach them, yeah.
Yeah, they're the busiest and they don't show up. They don't show up in their bathing suits at the grocery store.
Right, exactly. <Yeah. laughs> All right. So how did you become a facilitator? How did this all get started?
Well, I've been a facilitator in one way or another all of my working life, I think. I started out in the broadcast business. I was a composer and sound designer, producer.
Okay.
So I worked with lots of different kinds of people, everybody from creative directors to recording engineers to talent. And my job was always to corral those people towards common goals, oftentimes by directing them. And so as I morphed through the world of business into technology and was a creative director and a technical director, always working with teams of people to help them work together better. And then one day it just hit me, like that moment with the CEO standing up, that I have always created maps, I've always created visuals, and people asked me for these things framed to put up on walls, etc. And one day it just dawned on me, heck, this is actually a real role in the world, and people started calling me and asking me to facilitate. So I just jumped right in.
So you do have some sound and audio background. So maybe you could sing that Frank Zappa song for us. Yeah.
maybe
off the air, maybe.
Yeah,
one line. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not rap. It's from years ago, but he doesn't really sing it. It's like, in the kitchen, the All dangerous right. kitchen. I'm stopping.
It's good.
Stick to the visual there, maybe. Yeah.
That's right. Don't quit your day.
Yeah, there you go. So, So now, Rich, tell us, the audience and listeners, how they might get in touch with you, the best way to reach out.
The best way to reach out to me is just go to dangerouskitchen.com, and you'll find a lot of information there in visual and text format about how to reach me. I do have a guide about how to have meetings. It's called The Illustrated Guide to Great Meetings.
Okay.
That's in my blog. You could go there and find it, or you could just go to dangerouskitchen.com/guide. And you can download it. I don't ask for your email address or anything. Just get it. I just want to pay that forward a little bit and help the world become a better place so we don't have meetings that suck anymore.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, thanks again for being here. It's a pleasure, and thanks for hanging out in the studio with us. And we'll look forward to updates in the future.
Sure, thank
and,
you.
And so, Neil, who do you have up next on the air in the studio here?
Well, our next guest here is Michael B. Moore, and I do want to throw in the B because there are other Moores around. And he runs an organization called The Brand Farm, and we'd really like to know a little bit from the top, as they say, what that's all about.
Yeah, what's your backstory, Michael? Yeah. I've known you. Well, actually, we have two Moores in the studio here. Yeah. So,
oh my gosh, yeah. I've basically been a consultant, a marketing strategy consultant, for the last 15 or so years. I started my career after graduate school. I got an MBA at Duke, and then I came down here to work at Coke. Ended up running the Coke Classic business, what was called then the Coke Classic brand, but Coca-Cola brand. For a while, realized that I didn't really enjoy as much the bureaucracy that often is found in huge, you know, corporations, and started working in smaller companies. And basically, after a couple of stops, sort of put my own shingle out and have been consulting. The Brand Farm is really, it's a blog at the core. It's a place where I can go and write and talk and share about primarily the strategic side of marketing and branding. I've had a chance. I've worked at Coke. I worked at Kraft. I ran the Jell-O gelatin business there for a while. I've also been, you know, worked at startups, and I've actually gone back and worked for a couple of clients of mine. I've seen marketing from a variety of different contexts, and there's an enormous gulf between the kind of expertise that you can find around marketing and brand concepts at big companies versus small companies. And it doesn't make sense. I mean, we were talking before about accounting. I mean, if you are a small business or if you are a huge company, you're basically getting the same sort of caliber. You may have, there may be a bigger office and there may be more accountants on your team, but you're basically, the quality of the accounting you're getting is the same. Same with legal, same with whatever. But in marketing, oftentimes it's very different. And so I'm spending a lot of time trying to bridge that gap to try to bring, expertise and understanding about some of the more fundamental strategic aspects of marketing to a small and mid-sized business market.
So how can small business branding how small businesses can efficiently build strong brands? How do you do that? How do you get into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we live in a world where we're all bombarded with thousands and thousands of marketing messages a day. And so I think the first thing is that anybody who's selling to consumers or selling to anyone, but you've got to figure out, who are you? What makes you special and different? Marketing, we call it, the unique selling proposition.
Right.
And sometimes it's actually a little bit more complicated to sort of get at that than you might think. But, you've got to figure out what makes you unique, what makes you different, what makes you special. How does that link up with the consumers that you are targeting? And then figure out what the message is to those consumers, and then just make sure that everything that you do, every sort of consumer touch point, is consistent with that message. That's, I think, at the start of it. And then depending on your resources, we talked about social media. I absolutely agree. Face-to-face is the best, but in those situations where you can't meet all of your prospective consumers on a one-on-one basis, you've got to market to them. And, social media is wonderful because you can engage in conversations and dialogue and interact with them. And then, some of the broader kinds of marketing tools.
I think it's a good way for top of mind marketing, right? For social media, so that people kind of, your name is, that brand, if you will, or your name kind of resonates with them. But the face to face, I mean, you can't really substitute that. There's a lot of other platforms that you can market on and what have you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and again, I think if any business could reach out and develop a one-on-one relationship, I mean, that's what we're all striving to do, is to develop a one-on-one relationship. And as technology gets better, it's actually getting closer and closer. I mean, I envision a day when, the marketing experience is going to be pretty much targeted to each person individually. I know Google is working on that.
Yeah.
you've got to just reach out, figure out where your consumers are and how to reach out and touch them in a compelling way.
So what is brand strategy and how does it apply in this case?
Well, I think brand strategy is, in my opinion, at the core of marketing and branding. And again, part of what makes for small and mid-sized businesses, part of what makes it a challenge is that there are a lot of people that say that they do branding. I mean, you could talk to someone who is a graphic designer, they do branding. You could talk to someone who works at an advertising agency developing TV commercials, they do branding. I mean, there are a lot of people that do it. But at the core, it's you've got to really understand your consumers. You've got to understand what makes them tick. Depending on what you're selling or what your service is, there's a variety of different ways that you impact your consumers. You're impacting them physically. This bottle of water is satisfying a physical need, but then there are also brand and sort of emotional kinds of benefits that come from interacting with brands as well. And I think, brand strategy is at the core. It's understanding some of these key consumer insight driven.
Well, you kind of hit on emotion, and I don't know the statistics, but it's pretty high, right? That how many sales are generated or people respond on an emotional level, right, rather than logical. But now, speaking of, we were talking a little bit about competitors and your competition. You know, how do you coach someone to differentiate themselves amongst the sea of competitors they're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of different ways. It depends on the position that that company plays in the industry. If they are a newcomer and trying to carve out a completely independent, you know, sort of a presence, you know, sometimes it makes sense to, instead of saying that you are going to, we just use the example of water, you know, instead of coming out and saying, I'm getting into the water business, maybe you want to carve out an identity that allows you to sort of not have to compete against the big boys. And so instead of water, you know, maybe you are, I don't know, this is a bad example, yeah, off the top of my head, but maybe I'm in the refreshment business.
Or, right.
But it's just coming up with a way to reframe the conversation in a way that makes you look and seem special and different and unique. And I think that's the key. But again, it's understanding your consumers. What makes them tick? What do they expect out of you? What do they expect out of the category? And how can you frame what you do in a way that just makes it special and different and unique?
I'm sure there's a lot of small and medium businesses out there who are kind of thinking about, you know, finding an ad or a creative agency. Mm. How do you think would be the best way for them to go ahead and choose the right ad or creative agency?
That's a great question, because I think a lot of companies, big companies, make mistakes on this. I think the first, anytime one engages with a creative agency, frequently there's a urge to sort of look at the creative and to start talking about what they do. And, you know, from the agency standpoint, they're proud about sort of the outputs, so they're proud about their creative, and so that's what they want to do. I don't think that's the first, you know, when problems arise with agencies, it's usually not about the creative, it's about the strategic inputs that inform the development of the creative. And so I always advise companies to talk about the consumers. I mean, hopefully you will engage with an agency or a creative partner that has some kind of insight about your consumers, that has either created marketing materials for them before or has some sort of insight. So I say, you know, first meeting, maybe even don't even talk about creative, just talk about who they are, what they do, figure out, you know, look, all of us are selling to some degree, but figure out what specifically do they do well. They will tell you they do everything well, but figure out what do they really do, and is that something that you need? And then you know, once you get a basic comfort level with their expertise, with your consumers, then you can start talking about creative and sorts of other things. So it's a small nuance. It's just, you know, sort of diving into the consumer first.
I think the classic example is the Super Bowl commercial, right? That you see these huge agencies spend millions of dollars, right? And maybe an entire year working on something, and you watch the commercial, and sometimes you're just dumbfounded, like, who are they trying to reach, right? What's their message? And sometimes they're not even that funny. You're waiting for the punchline, right? I don't know. I was kind of disappointed myself this year in the commercial lineup, and I'm thinking, wow, really? These geniuses, you know, I don't think we're offending any of those companies, because they're probably not going to be underwriters for our show here in Buckhead. But seriously, it's like at that level, right? If that's the top of the game, I mean, how do you coach someone, or is it even possible, or what, you know, what are some key takeaways or that you could share with the listeners? How could someone build a strong brand without that massive, huge, you know, marketing budget?
Well, a couple things. First, I agree with you 100% about the Super Bowl. I mean, I think,
yes, I got one person. Yes,
I've written a blog about that. I think the Super Bowl is the worst thing that ever happened to advertising.
Okay,
because it's about putting entertaining and humorous kinds of things on. Frequently, they just, you know, plop a logo at the end, yeah, and they call that, you know, advertising. And that's really,
it's clever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really not. I mean, people are entertained, but is there, I mean, the whole point of advertising is to sell. It's
right.
To make, yeah, a commercial transaction, and
right,
entertaining sometimes,
yeah,
can lead.
It reaches that emotional level,
but,
right?
But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I think to answer, you know, it's, the other thing that I always say about marketing, if you took someone who is woefully out of shape, they've never worked out in their lives, but they've made a commitment to trying to get healthier, they said, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to walk 5 miles. Well, they could go out and walk 5 miles and then never do anything again. That would have some marginal benefit to their health, but not nearly the kind of health or the kind of impact that if you commit to a sustained long-term kind of a relationship or kind of a lifestyle around being healthy. And it's the same thing about advertising and reaching out and connecting with your consumers. You can go out and you can spend a lot of money on a Super Bowl ad and then never do anything else. And you might see some little blip, but you're not going to see the growth and the real connection to consumers that creates long-term brand equity and business.
So I think the key takeaway is being consistent and find something that you can afford that works with your budget, whatever, right? But it also kind of ties into that idea of, yeah, just buying one ad and then or going to one networking event, right? You got to be whatever you kind of invest in financially, time wise, emotional, you know, be consistent with it. And I think that's huge. So the startup and growth process, tell us a little bit about that from the standpoint of a, you know, that great brand.
Well, it's, you know, look, the statistics are pretty overwhelming and daunting that the vast majority, something like 70-80% plus of startups fail within 5 years. Some of that is because the idea itself is not particularly compelling. Some of it is that the people who are working on that idea are not prepared well enough to do that. But some of it is just that you could have a great idea, you could have great people, but if you don't execute,
right,
then you're not going to really do anything. And so from a marketing and branding standpoint, again, I think you've got to make that huge commitment. You've got to be all in to reaching out to, first of all, identifying the correct consumers to go after, because that's important. You know, no startup, not even the most well-funded startups, have enough money to sort of market to everyone. You've got to target specifically who it is that you're seeking to reach out to, building a relationship with them, you know, creating that relationship over time, strengthening that relationship over time, and then, you know, making sure that your product or service is, you know, something that delights them, you know, sort of, you know, without question. So
become I think the holy grail, right, is becoming the raving fans, right? Yeah. So speaking of branding, Michael B. Moore,
that's right.
Tell our listeners how they might get in touch with you and circle back around to find out more.
Yeah, my blog is at www.thebrandfarm.com. And again, there you'll find lots of blogs. I critique advertising as well. And so, if you're interested in marketing, that'll be a fun place for you to go. But then also, I'm obviously available and active on Twitter, where I'm at Michael @MichaelB_Moore.
Now, do you spell out underscore or no? That's just. Because some of her listeners are probably like, how do you spell underscore?
Yeah. Well, as has been mentioned, there are a lot of Michael
There's some people you don't want following you, if you know what I mean, right? So, well, Neil,
got something to say. I thought this was interesting that obviously Business Radio X is all about building business contacts and opportunities and challenges. And just to kind of, as I was thinking this, and obviously you'll probably think this is a terrible pun, but everybody talks a lot about farm to table. And I would say farm to kitchen, brand farm to dangerous kitchen. Interesting opportunity there. What do you
without
think?
Notes, we were thinking the exact thing. I was going to steal that. That was a great idea.
Wow.
Farm to table, absolutely, yeah. So, Neil, what do you think so far? Some interesting guests, right?
Absolutely, really.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, who are tuned in and are really, you know, getting a lot out of this. I think it's very helpful to a lot of small businesses and medium-sized businesses.
Absolutely, yeah. Even the Justin Biebers of the world.
There you go. Even the big businesses.
I'm not sure how we tie them in from farm to table to, yeah, never mind. But meanwhile, we have our anchor man. I mean, not Ron Burgundy, but a guy that's going to bring us home and tie this all in together. And it's got some interesting stuff to talk about. Doug Grady has been studying and teaching pathways to personal potential for over 20 years. Professional speaker, musician. So we might get a song in here eventually. We'll team you up with Rich, the wannabe, singer, performer. Yeah. Meanwhile, he'll do the design of your CD coming out there, Doug. But meanwhile, he's the author of Ripple Effect. His company's writings, trainings, and music are designed with one purpose, to help people reach their God-given potential. Doug gives a significant proportion of his time to money to local and global causes. Been on several mission trips, most recently to Ecuador. We want to hear a little bit about that. Part of a 12-man team building homes for the poorest of the poor. Doug's an active member of Peachtree Presbyterian Church here in Atlanta. And if we had our applause sound effects, we would tune those up right now. But
we have people in the studio. Come on,
I've had a round of applause. Yeah.
Hey, all right. Right.
Yeah. If you don't ask for it, you don't get it, right? Yeah.
Well, Rich, thanks for having me on the
Absolutely.
Show. I really appreciate it. You and I go back a few years,
yeah.
And it's also good to be with my second favorite British actor.
Wait a minute.
Second only to your favorite. So,
yeah, okay, good.
Thanks so much for having me on Business Radio X Buckhead. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Doug. So tell us a bit about your backstory. How did you come about to where you're at now, changing the world? Sorry.
Well,
I saved the tough questions for last. Yeah.
Right. I've always been interested in what gets people to grow, what gets people to reach their God-given potential, what gets people stuck on the way. And I've been stuck on the way myself a few times. But I was in the insurance business out in Southern California. I went to my first motivational seminar. Do you remember your first motivational seminar?
Yeah, I was actually the speaker at my first motivational
seminar.
What?
Yeah. So there I am in the audience. And I, it was a Brian Tracy seminar. I was struggling in sales at the time. Somebody said, go to this seminar, read this book. I went to the seminar. I read this book, and I applied as much as I could. And I ended up going from one of the worst salespeople in the company to literally one of the top salespeople out of a couple hundred
Wow.
in about 3 months. And so I was hooked. I was like, this is the holy grail of my life. I'm going to study and learn and achieve. And this so-called success in self-help industry became almost a religion to me. I went to all the seminars, people that I'm sure you've heard of, the Tony Robbins, the Brian Tracy's, the Jack Canfields, the Rich Casanovas.
Yeah. Now, see, if you went to mine, you would have the reverse effect. You wouldn't put it to the top guy, to the lowest on the totem pole.
What?
So now this ripple effect.
Yeah.
Interesting title. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, with all this so-called knowledge, expertise, and brilliance that I'd had through the years, I thought I was pretty successful. I was living on the beach in Southern California. I was really living my dream, making more money I ever made before in my life. I got to share the stage with some of these great speakers
wow.
and heroes, and I thought I was so successful. And then something happened out in California. The real estate market started to tank. Do you remember this, Adrian?
Absolutely.
It happened
you had
a little
nothing
bit
to do with it, though, right? Yeah.
Out there before it hit the East Coast, it hit out there in Southern California. And our business was tied about 70% to the real estate market. And so we started to tank along with it. My business partner had this great idea. I'll sell this business to Doug. And so I bought this company called High Achievers. It was, most people, they buy a company for it's multiple streams of
sure,
income.
Yeah, yeah.
I now had multiple streams of expenses, and I just couldn't keep up. And so, I kind of my tail between my legs brought the company to Atlanta. I had these bad habits that were kind of creeping up on me. Success has a cycle, and so does failure. And I started to get overtaken by this failure mentality. Everything I did seemed to not work out, and I ended up sitting in my Buckhead apartment. I threw my hands up. I put my head on my desk. I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I just gave up. I can't do it anymore. I mean, at this moment in time, I had a bad attitude. I was drinking excessively. Relationships were suffering. My girlfriend at the time broke up with me. I was emotionally a mess. I mean, I was, and this is at the moment in time, Rich, I'm the owner of a company called High Achievers.
Right. Good times. Yeah.
So the ripple effect started for me when I literally gave up, and I got, I don't know if I've ever had such a specific answer to prayer, and the room didn't shake. I didn't see any visions, but I just became present to two things. I'd been given much in the way of training and education, skills, people that cared about me that, by the way, I wasn't talking to or communicating with. And by contrast, I was putting in very little. You talked about the mission trip. I was on my first mission trip about 4 weeks earlier to Ecuador. And I got to see how some of the rest of the world lives. And I thought I had no money. Some of these people literally had less money the whole year than I had in my pocket.
Wow.
And so I started to take inventory of my blessings and the things I could be grateful for. And it started for me just by making a choice. I'm going to do whatever it takes this next 6 months to go all in. And all in's kind of, it's like a poker term. You ever
right,
play
right.
poker before?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. If all in's one of two things can happen. What are those two things?
Either I lose or the other guy wins.
Yeah,
that's been my experience.
Yeah, you can more than double up, or you lose everything you have at that moment. So that was the moment of reckoning for me. I just went, and the first choice I made, the ripple effect that began it all, was I was challenged by a man named Scott Goodnight to take on a personal discipline for 30 consecutive days. I chose exercise, and by exercising and paying attention to this one choice, everything started to shift.
And I know we're going to circle back around to this 40 days of focus, which is very intriguing. But how do people keep reaching, you know, what I guess prevents people from reaching their potential?
Well, there's a couple.
A couple of things.
Two things. One is their relationship to failure. I remember sitting in church one day and the preacher said, so often we want to be rescued from the storm. We don't realize it's the storm that rescues us. And here I was in this massive storm. I think I was hungover at church. I mean, I was just in this horrible,
mess.
I was a mess. I'm not kidding. I was in a horrible space. You never know what, I met you back then. You never know what's going on under the surface of people's lives. I would show up and put on a pretty face and smile and kiss babies and all that stuff. But underneath it, I was just a mess. And I remember thinking, what if that is true? What if this storm that I'm in really is there to rescue me? And so I shifted my relationship to failure. That's number one. Number two is the choices we make, we've got to honor. And that's where a lot of people break down. Even with this 30-day commitment to exercise, day five, I didn't want to do it.
Right.
And somehow I was able to channel my father's voice when I didn't want to do stuff when I was a kid. I didn't want to clean my room or eat vegetables or chop wood. He would say these three little words, do it anyway.
Anyway?
Do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so I got on the floor of my Buckhead apartment, and I did it anyway. I went through some motions that some people might consider to be exercise. I did some push-ups, some sit-ups.
Exorcism or exercise,
yeah. I did. There was probably some expletives involved, but you know what? I got it done. And that's the – I think this is one of the biggest places where people fail to reach their potential. They don't do it because they don't want to do it. You can't make me do it. I don't feel like doing it, so they don't do it, and they lack integrity in their choices.
I know we're going to talk in a minute about this 40 days of focus, but before we talk about that, it's kind of what Michael was saying earlier, is that you can go out and have the best of plans and exercise one day, but you've got to be committed, you know, when the commitment's not there, right? But but on a little different note about I know I've experienced this a lot. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, people I've met in business, especially in business, because you're balancing a lot of things, right? Family, faith, your personal situation, and obviously your business. So, if you had to give a couple of tips for our listeners, you know, how do they manage that information overload?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Especially in social media world we're in.
I get
24/7, right?
I get it. I've got 247 unopened emails right now in a folder marked education. I mean, how's that? And I'm in
at least it's not
education
marked.
Business,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I get it. And, you know, our phones are connected to Twitter and countless other apps with the touch of a button. And, you know, I think I hear my phone ringing now. You know, it's like constant interruption information. I think you got to do less. You got to dumb it down and say, what am I? It starts with one question. What am I not doing right now? What one simple choice can I make that I'm not doing right now that could have an impact on my life in a positive way?
I want to know, how do we break bad habits? Because we all have bad habits. How do we break those?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's various studies here that most studies say it takes a lot longer than 21 days to create or make a habit. The average now I'm hearing is like 66 days to develop a new habit or break an old habit. One of the best ways to break an old habit is to develop a new habit, to replace that old habit. I quit smoking in 2003, and I did it by first going from 20 cigarettes. I had this master plan to go down to one, but you know, it didn't work out so well. Meanwhile, you know, I had this I got an email from the New York City Marathon that says, congratulations, you're in the New York City Marathon. So, you know, here I am. I got a choice to make. It's this moment. The ultimate pivot point with regard to bad habits is you've got to say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to break this habit. So what I actually did, Neil, is I bought a pair of running shoes. They were $200, and it was a lot of money for me at the time. And I bought a pair of running shoes, and I said, if I ever start smoking again, I'm going to destroy these running shoes. And so whenever I wanted to smoke, I'm telling you, I put the running shoes on, I went running. It was certainly not as fun as smoking a cigarette.
No.
But eventually, it developed that habit, and eventually, it took a few months before I stopped thinking about cigarettes. And, well, byproduct in the meanwhile, I get in better shape. So I think we got to look at what kind of life do we want to have and look at those habits. Look at something that would replace that bad habit.
And something you replace, you can't do the bad habit at the same time, right? So it's kind of hard to smoke and be running at the same time, right? So,
well, it's not impossible.
It's not impossible.
It.
I'm sure you've tried it. Whatever. Yeah.
But it's not ideal.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So tell us, what does a lifestyle of high achievement mean?
Well, that's a great question, Neil. I think that our habits actually develop our lifestyles, which are choices. If you collect all these choices together and you look at your life, You have a lifestyle. When I say lifestyle, I don't mean, you know, like lifestyles of the rich and family, how you spend, you know, all of the, everything that we do creates a lifestyle. So if you want to shift your life, shift your lifestyle, shift how you show up, shift the people. I call this the ripple effect because everything started to shift. I mean, the people in my life started to shift. I got rid of some people that didn't need to be there. I quit drinking completely. I started getting closer to my faith and my family. I became the son I wanted to be, or at least closer to it, the uncle I wanted to be. And so my lifestyle started to change by paying attention to this one simple choice and the person I wanted to become as a result. So I think when we look at our lives and our lifestyles, we look at the person we want to be and the world we want to be around, and it will automatically start to shift in that area.
Yeah, speaking of that, I know Charlie Tremendous Jones once said, right, is, and other people have said it as well, but the person you become in 5 years is what?
Yeah.
The five people you associate with, the books you read, the seminars you attend, and I would even say the concerts you, or the movies you go to, because it's all, you know, sure, it's life experience, but you choose whether you're going to see the crime, you know, dramas on TV, or if you're going to watch, Bloomberg News or something.
Sure.
Inspirational or that type of thing. But
yeah, music's been a huge part of my life. And so I'm a musician. That's one of the things I enjoy most. But something as simple as just creating, I call it motivational music. Just set a little thing on
Absolutely.
Your iPod,
yeah.
Songs that inspire you, get you excited, get you fired up, stuff all that
clears the clears the cobwebs out and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So what are the keys to personal growth? I know we don't have an hour and a half for you to tell us that.
But in 30 seconds or less,
what's your elevator pitch to that?
The biggest thing I think that I've found, so many people have been to seminars, they read books, and nothing changes. Has this ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah.
It's happened to me.
You talking to me?
Yeah. Hey, I've been through hundreds of these seminars, and something changes, something did. Look, nothing works, and it all works. What really works is your relationship to it, as how do you become aware of the impact of your choices. When I started exercising every day, sounds like a simple choice, and it was, I would sit down every day, Neil, and I'd take out a journal. What's different about my life because of this choice? What's better in my life because of this choice? And what I was doing, whether I knew it or not, was expanding my awareness. What we focus on expands. This, I believe, is the key to personal potential. Doing the work is not enough. You've got to pay attention to the impact of the choice in your life. And that's what was different for me 4 years ago. And that's why my life changed. I'd been to all the seminars. Heck, I'd led the seminars. What was different was my awareness and paying attention to the impact of this choice on every area of my life.
Now, this finally, this 40 days of focus, I know a little bit about. We were at actually at an international networking event a couple weeks ago. And you were one of the speakers, I believe, and we chatted afterwards, and I went to your site. But tell me, tell us a little bit more about that.
This is really where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
It's taking on one simple choice. It's doing the thing I did with a lot more structure and a lot of support that I did it. It begins with a question. What's one simple choice I can make every day, the same choice, the same discipline for 40 consecutive days that would have a positive, profound impact on my life? And it's every day there's an email, there's a message of the day, there's a video of the day, less than 90 seconds usually for the ADD generation. But I'm telling you, if you plug into this thing, you do it every day. The promise of the program is that you'll have benefit, not just in that area. So if it's a health discipline, the promise of the program is you'll see an impact with your family, in your faith, in your business, in seemingly unrelated areas of your life if you do it every day and pay attention. So that's how we've set this up. It's not enough to do the work. You got to pay attention to the impact of your life. That's how 40 Days of Focus helps me, helps you, and helps right now 65 people going through the program.
So they kind of tie in together. It's almost 40 days of ripple, the ripple effect, whatever, right? Because as you focus on one thing, it's amazing how it spills over into other parts of your life. I mean, quick story about myself, and this idea of focus is a lot of people talk about it, but I know I did something a while back, recently, where all I focused on is just eliminating sugar from my diet.
Yeah.
Right. No major exercise program. I didn't. It wasn't a 27, part process and
right.
and measuring carbs and calories and meal plans and I've tried that, but we get inundated with too much information. And so literally and people talk about taking sugar out of their diet. Oh, I don't put I don't pour sugar in and I don't drink all that stuff. Right. But every time I purchased something, I'd look at the label, and mm-hmm. I would always just purchase the two items, whatever, the less sugar.
Right.
That was the only thing I did, and I've lost 22 pounds.
Wow.
Doing nothing else.
So I got a question for you. Yeah. What have you noticed outside of what you would consider health and fitness by that discipline and the integrity it took to honor that choice?
It's weird. It's hard to really verbalize, but by doing that, I think consciously or unconsciously, I'm making better health choices,
right,
in a little bit more exercise, but also in better food choices. But I mean, literally, but the focus, the key thing is, all I did was just eliminate sugar.
Yeah.
Reading every, I never bought a single item without looking at the sugar content. And if one had 6 grams and the other was 3, I picked the 3.
Yeah.
I didn't analyze it, overanalyze all the other 29 ingredients or components.
Yeah.
And
if you dig a little deeper, and that's what this program encourages you to do, is to dig deep in this 40 days of focus, you'll find that other things are happening outside of health and fitness. You'll find your conversations are different. You've got a stronger sense of your purpose in life. And we had a man, for example, Rich, I said, I'll not do caffeine. Not even coffee, but he took caffeine out.
Now that I'm not doing that. You're not talking me into
but
that.
Here's,
one.
I'm not trying to talk you into anything. This is what his choice was. And it's got to be a personal choice or you probably won't do it. So he took caffeine out. He set his number one commission month for the quarter in over 10 years in a very competitive industry. We've got this on document. He's a public testimonial man named Bill Johnson, financial services expert in town. His number one commission quarter. He said the integrity it took to order to decaf translated into integrity in his business, his prospecting, his follow through, and ultimately his income.
So if you're promising I'll triple my income if I reduce coffee, maybe I'll talk. We'll talk about that.
I'm not promising you anything. I'm sharing an example.
No, I agree.
And the power of paying attention. No. And I tell you, if you pay attention to the impact, what we focus on expands, and you'll get more of those ripples in your life.
Absolutely. No, I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah.
I met Doug about 2 or 3 months ago, and I got to tell you, I read with great interest his Ripple Effect, and I'd recommend it to anybody.
Thank
it
you.
Certainly helped me. It was a great little book, a lot of insights, nothing too complicated, really a lot of common sense, a lot of good things that we all understand, but just putting it in the context of our lives. A great book, Ripple Effect by Doug Grady.
Thank you very much, cool. Neil. We've got a special discount just for 40. It's a 40% off discount just for Business Radio X Buckhead listeners. It's 40X.
Nice, so nice. I love that.
You can remember
40X,
that.
Yeah.
Just go to 40 Day Focus and plug into the program.
So tell our listeners, Doug, how would they get in touch with you and find out more?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty easy to find. At Doug Grady on Twitter, Doug Grady Training on Facebook. And I just want to strongly encourage, if you're thinking about a shift in your life, check out 40dayfocus.com. Throw your hat in the ring and some shifts will happen because of it.
And I'll share with you one of my favorite quotes that I think kind of ties into this is I heard years ago, and I think it's apropos here. It says, simplify life to elevate purpose.
I like that.
Right? Think about that. Simplify life to elevate purpose. If we eliminate all that clutter,
yeah,
it's amazing what you can do. Well, it's been my pleasure, thrill, and so excited to have everyone here in the studio for another week of Business Buckhead Radio X.
Thank you.
And just thrilled to have you all here and hope to see everyone next week on the air. It's Rich Casanova signing out once again. See you next time.